Economic Development to order, and I talked to some of our members. We're going to try to make this a very fast meeting, if at all possible, but we'll see what develops. But with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 117 and ask Rocky King to come forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record and members of the committee, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. I've also asked Tom Jovic, who is the program manager for the pool, to come before me today. Well, I'm going to give you a quick 3 or 4 minute overview of what OMIP is, point out some materials that we've passed out that you can read later. I'm happy to answer questions, and then I'll get it right into the bill. OMIP was started basically out of the 1987 and 89 legislative sessions. Started our offering policies in July of 1990. It was basically designed to offer health insurance to people who had chronic health conditions that were being turned down in the individual market. They didn't have group coverage available to them. They have MS, cancer, asthma, mental health issues. They had money to buy insurance, but just no carrier would accept them in the individual market because of those pre-existing conditions. So OMIP started really with the premise that we wanted a place for those folks to go. We offer a variety of plans, 4 different health benefit plans to those folks on a statewide basis. They're administered by a third-party administrator. Right now it's Blue Cross Blue Shield. Every 3 years we put a contract or an RFP out to select a third-party administrator, and they do all of the eligibility and claims payment for us while the board establishes the policies and the benefits and the rates for the pool. It really is an insurance company that is administered through the state. Funding is always an issue, and people want to know, where do we get our funds to operate this insurance company? About 65% of the funding for the pool comes from premiums we charge the individuals that are enrolled. And we are, by law, allowed to charge up to 125% of the standard premium for a like product in the commercial market if they had access to it. The board sets those rates, I think, for the current year are at about 111%, so there's only about 11% surcharge. They could charge more but have chosen not to. The remaining money, about 35% of the funds we expend, comes from an assessment of health insurers in the state. And each year, and we'll have a bill to talk about that, we do a count of all health insurers in the state and the number of lives that are enrolled by them, and that loss then is divided based on the proportion of lives that a particular carrier has. I think it's important to note that OMIP is a part of DCBS, one of the divisions. However, from a policy basis, we are basically managed by a board, and that board is made up of 5 representatives from the health insurance industry. We have 2 consumer advocates. We have the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, Corey Streichinger, who is also the insurance commissioner, and we have a provider representative. So the bills that I'm bringing you today are bills, all but one, that came through the board, and the industry and the advocates have agreed to submit to DCBS and then the governor and put before you the legislature. So let me talk about Senate Bill 117, unless you have some questions. And in the packet is the membership of the boards. We have the benefit packages, some statistics on the OMIP pool, but given the time constraints, I'll let you thumb through those, and if you have questions, bring them up. Senate Bill 117, in a really summary form, is that the federal government passed what's called the Trade Act, I think it was in 2002, to make people who lost their jobs because of some of the trade policies, NAFTA and some of those, eligible for a health insurance subsidy from the federal government, that if they were enrolled in a qualified plan, that the federal government would pay, I believe, 65% of the premium for those folks who lost their jobs because of actions that the federal government has taken looking at worldwide trade. The problem is that a state has to have what is called a qualified plan, and there are specific criteria that plan has to meet. And in Oregon, other than COBRA coverage, there is no plan that those people can enroll in that would allow them to get the 65% premium subsidy. We've had a lot of meetings with all the carriers as to whether they wanted to modify some of the Oregon statutes to allow them or put them in a position to have to take these folks, or whether we should use the OMIP pool. Most states, and there are 31 now that have qualified plans, have chosen, I believe, a combination of either their high-risk pool or some of their commercial market. We have a bill here basically that establishes a new eligibility group to serve those people that are eligible under the Federal Trade Act, and those are certified by the Employment Department as to be eligible for the premium subsidy. There's about 1,700 or 1,800 folks in Oregon that would qualify, and we've put some testimony, I think, or that's been submitted by a couple of folks that would be very interested in seeing the passage of this. We have some people in OMIP paying the full cost of premiums now that until we get the qualification for the federal government for this pool, they can't get the subsidy to help them pay the premium. So Senate Bill 117 basically sets up an eligibility category that these folks then, if they enrolled in OMIP, would be eligible for the federal subsidy. Again, 1,700, 1,800 that would be eligible statewide. We anticipate at the most 10% of those would take advantage of this program nationally. In those states that have designated qualified pools, only 3 to 5% have enrolled to date. So it's really catching those people that are in tough conditions, can't find other jobs, and can't afford their premiums.
Thank you, Mr. King. A question. This does not encompass any general fund, correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And does it in any way have any potential for encumbering future general fund?
Unless there was a change, Mr. Chair, in how OMIP was funded, which would be a legislative decision, the answer to that is no.
Yes.
Senator Montesano.
In a sense, I beg to differ in that if they don't have insurance, they are going into the hospitals or ERs, and therefore a drain on general fund money, in a sense, if you want to look at it from that point of view.
That would be the case, yes. If
the cost of being incurred or the health care is not being delivered and people aren't as healthy as they should be.
Any other questions? And just to clarify, and the members, as you articulated, who represent all the industry, are in. No one else has testified or signed up to testify on this bill. Have been in agreement in this piece.
That's correct. Right. Well, the board took a position on this particular bill. The other ones they supported and have passed it through. On this particular bill, which doesn't impact their operation of their program today in terms of co-pays or benefit direction, they've taken not a position of support nor against, and said this is really an issue between the governor and the legislature and the Department of Consumer Business Services. So there's no objection to it. They just felt that it was not their role to say this is what the pool should do. That should be more of the governor and the legislature.
Senator Scar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I get this in my mind, the folks that would be eligible under this particular bill are the same folks that are eligible for trade adjustment assistance federally.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr,
I believe that would be correct.
Please identify yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm Tom Jovic, the manager of the medical insurance pool.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 117. Open a work session on Senate Bill 117. Okay, I have a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'll move Senate Bill 117 to the Senate floor with the due pass.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 117 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So good. Senator Mona Sanderson, just because I know this is two in a row for you, but this is kind of your area, would you like to carry that bill for us?
I would be delighted to.
Okay, wonderful. Senator Mona Sanderson will carry. So open up public hearing on Senate Bill 122. And again, batting, Rocky King.
Mr. Chair, again for the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. Senate Bill 122 allows us basically to make discretionary an assessment reduction program that is used in the pool to give some recognition to to carriers who have low rejection rates in the individual market. It came out of the 1990s, and basically what we were trying to design was a way to go to some of the individual market carriers and say, look, if you take more people into your regular pool so they don't have to come to OMIP, it means good things for them. They pay a little bit less premium, and it means good things for us because our assessment doesn't grow. So we're going to actually give you a credit based on your rejection rates. For example, if you keep a low rejection rate, you'll get a credit towards your assessment. However, things have changed since the mid-90s in terms of the individual market. First of all, about 50% of our applications come in with agent declinations rather than a company actually rejecting the individual. So some of the rejection rates are skewed just because people don't have to go to carriers to get those rejections. Secondly, two bills passed last session that allowed individuals to get individual policies with waivers. Before, you couldn't provide any waiver of any condition. If they took you, they took you for all conditions subject to a pre-existing period. But now they're allowed to actually get a waiver for a specific condition. We'll treat you for everything but your asthma for a two-year period. After 2 years, we'll treat you for everything. That means that we would like people, if they can, if it's not a major cost driver for them, to go to the individual market and test out and see if the carriers are going to take them. Another one is that last session the legislature passed a law that allowed carriers to actually reject for some of their plans but accept somebody for an individual plan. Used to be if you were accepted by a carrier for an individual plan, all the plans were available to you. Now a carrier can say, well, we may not put you in the $200 deductible plan, but if you want the $500 or the $1,000 or the $1,500, we'll accept you. So our whole basis for the assessment reduction program has kind of changed over the last 5 or 6 years, especially with this legislation. What the board is asking is really to have the discretionary authority to alter that and to phase it out if they so choose, if it isn't applicable, given today's some of the legislative changes over the last couple of years. It doesn't say the board's not going to get rid of it. Doesn't say it's going to keep it. It just gives them the flexibility to work with the industry and the insurance commissioner, who must approve any plan they put forth. There is only one carrier now that receives any assessment reduction, and that is Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. The other three carriers in the past that received it no longer are receiving it. The other problem, if you reward a carrier on the basis of rejection rates, but if an agent knows that they can go to carrier C and get a faster rejection, they're going to send all their applications to one carrier, not because they can get in or out, just because they can get a letter of recognition or rejection faster than another carrier. So the way we reward the carriers really has lost any relevance based on how they're doing business today. The board very much supports this, and the insurance carriers have agreed that this would be something that they believe would be very workable for them. Thank you, Mr. King. Questions, Mr. King? Again, no one else has signed up. We do have industry representatives in the audience and have not chosen to sign up. Is there any second thoughts on that? Okay. Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 122, open work session on Senate Bill 122. I have a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 122 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 122 to the floor with the due pass. Is there any discussion? Any objection? In order. I'll carry that one. Open up public hearing on Senate Bill 123. Again, Mr. King.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again for the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. Senate Bill 123, and you have my testimony in front of you, basically does five things that the board believes would assist in better management of the pool and better benefit to those enrolled. The first is changing the date of counting of insured lives. If you recall, I talked to you about an assessment of health insurers. That is based on a count that is done December 31st of each year. However, the assessments that take place the following July and the following January, based on that December 31st assessment, can be as much as a year, year and a half old in terms of what a carrier actually has in terms of people enrolled in their plan. All the carriers are asking is to move that date from December 31st to March 31st, which would allow for all the plan changes that occur in the month of January and February when most health insurance plans renew, and thus would provide us a more accurate count when we go to make our assessments of health insurers, accurate in the sense it would be almost basically reflecting all of the plan changes for that particular year. The insurance carriers, again, support this. It means it's revenue neutral. There are some carriers from year to year, for the first year, will pay a little more and some a little less, but it'll even out and reflect more accurately the cost associated with the people they have enrolled in their plans. Questions on that? I'll go to number two. Number two is changing the lifetime maximum benefit. The pool was first established in 1989 and by statute can only pay out $1 million lifetime for an enrollee. Since 1990, we've seen the market move into the $2 and $3 million range, and in the cases of some HMOs, no lifetime max. The board would like authority basically to have the ability to move the lifetime maximum benefits that our enrollees can have to equal what is out there in the general market. So they're asking for the discretion basically to set it above that $1 million or below if the market were to go below, although it's not going to do that. But they'd like the discretion to really follow the market here rather than be tied in to the $1 million max. The third piece of this bill provides the board some ability to make exceptions to a 12-month re-enrollment waiting period. When the pool was first established, there was a lot of concern. Somebody would come in, get their medical benefits, jump out, stop paying premiums, 4 months later, get sick, come back into the pool. So we established a 12-month waiting. If you come in and you get out, you've got to wait 12 months before you can come back. Now, there are some exceptions, people going to Medicaid, people going to Medicare. Because they lose their eligibility to Medicaid, they could come back to us because it's only a 6-month eligibility. But there are no other exceptions, and we have found handfuls, small but meaningful to those individuals, people who do leave the pool for legitimate reasons. They get group coverage and lose that group coverage. No portability is available, but they can't come back to the pool. So they're left without any commercial option whatsoever, without us having the ability to define some exceptions to that statutory language, which doesn't allow for exceptions other than Medicare and Medicaid. So the 12-month waiting period is in the statute now, and the board is just saying, give us the ability when people fall through the cracks to maybe make some exceptions to let those folks in. Number four is allowing the board to contract with vendors who aren't licensed insurers. Our statutes right now say that we can pick one insurer to administer our program for us. And since 1990, that has been Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. But the board is also looking at some other services around, for example, disease management. Some of that, we do some disease management through Regents, but there are some other programs that they may want to add. But we're precluded to contracting with those people because statute says you can only do with one particular carrier. There's also some interest and looking at it, contracting with a different network system to bring back in, for example, a Kaiser HMO product or a HealthNet HMO, because Regents, our current insurer, doesn't provide any HMO options. So the board just wants the flexibility to be able to look at some multiple vendors for some of the disease management or possibly network services that we require. Again, I think everybody supports this. That would not be practical to implement for about 2.5 years because our current contract doesn't run out for that time. So it's really planning for the future. And finally, creating benefit plans for medical eligible enrollees. We serve two populations. Those that come into the pool because of a health condition, chronic health condition, and secondly, those people who do not have portability coverage available to them in the group market. Out of the about 10,400 enrollees, 1,800 of those are come in on the basis of portability, the remainder on medical. but our statutes changed in the middle 90s as we expanded portability. Tie our benefit packages to the portability market only. And the portability plan that the state uses is really only updated every 3 to 4 years by the Department of Consumer and Business Services, our agency, simply because of the cost of doing it for carriers every year. However, because of the folks that we have in this pool, the board would like greater flexibility to move faster around benefit designs that would hopefully limit some of the costs, better serve our clients. And by doing that, they want to base our medical eligible benefits on the employer market as opposed to the portability market, feeling that it is much more up to date and allows the board greater flexibility around benefit design to serve the majority of our populations. We would always still have the portability benefits available, but they just wouldn't change except for every 3 or 4 years. But the medical benefit could change on a year-to-year basis based on the needs of our clients. So that's kind of a summary of that bill. And the board, again, with representatives of advocates in the industry and the insurance commissioners, support all the concepts contained within.
Mr. King, just to reiterate on the issue of reinstating coverage exceptions to the 12-month enrollment period for OMIP, and would those be then done by the board or by rulemaking of the department?
The board would establish the criteria, then, which would have to be adopted by rule by the department.
Questions for Mr. King? Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the second change that you talked about, changing the lifetime maximum benefit limit, do you have any examples of how many folks have had, that are insured under the program that have bumped into the $1 million limit? What kind of numbers are we perhaps talking about?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I believe that is 3 to 5. Pardon?
Yes. Excuse me, I'm Tom Jovic, the manager of the program. We've had 5 people since the program began in 1990. 3 of those occurred last year, and 1 occurred the year before, and then 1 occurred in the entire period up to that last year. It's just that the costs have escalated, so $1 million becomes something that people blow through more quickly than they used to.
So that Senator Starr, is about 5 out of 33,000 that we've served, or 34,000 over the 14-year period of time. But you do run into cases. For example, one of them that we had this year was a hemophiliac that can just really knock those costs out the door rather quickly. It hasn't been a big impact, but again, once they reach that $1 million, and these folks have any kind of income or working, and they very often their families do, there's no option for them except OMIP, and they can't get benefits from OMIP because they've reached the $1 million.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm curious as to the thought process that goes into the drafting of the bill, and where instead of bumping the limit up, the board decided to to suggest that the legislature give them the authority to set whatever limit that is. Can you maybe talk a little
bit
about what was the rationale behind, why not just bump it to $2 million as opposed to giving the board discretion?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, the portability benefits are based on standard plans that are forth by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The insurance commissioner actually approves a series of portability benefits. Every 3 to 4 years, those are reviewed. They reviewed them a few years ago, and they established them recently at $2 million lifetime max. We, by law, are supposed to match that, but by law can't because we have a $1 million limit. If they choose to change that next year, then we would have to come back and every year do that. And they've changed it, I think, two times, I think, since they started portability in 1996. Then the second piece of that is the medical eligible, where we want to base it on the commercial market. They may change every year, and it's $2 million right now. We believe that that's going to be $3 million next year. The board just didn't want to get into a position of having to come back in every other year or every year just to get that particular piece changed. I will tell you, though, there is a consumer advocate on our board, David Haupt, who is very interested to make sure that the board doesn't backtrack on that, that they do keep with, as the statute says, what is happening in the commercial market and what is happening in the portability market. But I think it was more that we don't dictate when the markets change, but we've got to be in a position to change when the markets change.
Other questions? Senator Montesano.
Can you explain a little bit to me how the fund works that you draw from to pay these claims? How much is in there? And
sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, the assessment, again, makes up about 35% of the expenditure. So for every dollar we get in premium, we expend about $1.65. And every 6 months, we look at our enrollment projections, who's enrolled now, what our projections are for the next 6 months, and basically look at what we're going to get in terms of revenue from premiums and what we're going to pay in claims. Take that short. For example, in January, we did that for the January through July or June 31st and determined that we were short or going to be short about $14 or $15 million. I think it was $15 million. So that we then assess the insurers once every or twice a year, January and July usually, for that $15 million or whatever the projection show is going to be the loss. We keep in reserve 1 month's claims, which is about $6 million, plus $2 million. So we try to keep some money in reserves, about $8 million, so that if we are wrong and the enrollment goes a lot higher, then we don't have to do a special assessment. And in the 15 years we've been running, we've never had to do a special assessment. If we have over-assessed the carriers, then we reduce the next assessment by that amount. And an example of that is that a few assessments ago, we were at 15. That was too much. The next assessment then was $9 million. This current biennium, we're going to assess the insurers about $50 million over this two-year period. Last biennium, it was $53 million, so we actually have reduced the assessment a little bit this biennium, primarily due to the enrollment leveling off and the health conditions or the claims being under what we projected. The average assessment that we make for the last 3 years is $1.20 per member enrolled. So if you're, for example, have an individual policy or a group policy and your premium is $300 a month, I will tell you that the carrier is getting assessed about $1.20 of that premium in order to support the pool. It's an explicit cost shift. Cost shifts occur all over. Implicit is when you have Medicare, Medicaid, tax deductions for businesses where you don't know how much part of the premium is because we pay low reimbursement for Medicare or Medicaid or the tax structure. Explicit cost shifts is when we can tell you how much of that premium actually is going to a specific, for a specific reason. Portability is explicit. They can tell you how much the portability charges apply to your premium, how much administration. So it is a cost shift, but it's an explicit one.
Thank you.
Question, Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answer brought a question to my mind. $1.20 per month or $1.20 annually?
Senator Starr, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, it's $1.20 per month per member enrolled by a health plan. So if a health plan has 100 members, they're going to pay $120 per month, which we do on a six-month basis for the assessment.
Okay.
Other questions? Good. Any issues at all? Okay. Anyone else is set up to testify on this? See any nods in the audience? All right. Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 123, and let's open up a work session then on Senate Bill 123.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move 123 to the Senate floor with the DuPass.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 123 to the floor with the DuPass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Who'd like to carry this one?
Okay.
Senator Starr will carry. Okay, we're moving right through here. We're going to get done here soon, folks. So let's open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 130.
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. 130 focuses on what we call the adverse underwriting condition, or excuse me, adverse underwriting definition contained with the within the insurance statutes. There are several ways a individual can get into the pool. One is to go to a carrier and basically get declined coverage because of a pre-existing condition, health condition. Another way is the loss of portability coverage. One of the ways defined in our statute is that they can go to an agent who can say, based on your health condition, I'm going to write a letter and basically refuse to apply to a carrier of your choice. That's part of the definition of adverse underwriting condition. That is, an agent's refusal to apply on behalf of that client. The board wants to exclude an agent refusal as under the definition of adverse underwriting. When we first started the program, 3 to 5% of the folks that came into our program came in with a letter from an agent that said, I'm refusing to apply on behalf of this individual, please let them go into OMIP. That figure has grown to over 50% now. And that means that a lot of folks are coming to us that may in fact be able to get coverage, and it's not that agents are doing a bad job, but they're not underwriters. So they may be making judgments about these folks that aren't necessarily accurate in terms of their ability to get regular individual coverage. So we want to exclude that as a process. However, the agent will still be involved in assisting in the applications and still can get credit for that. We're going to replace it with our ability to actually list specific conditions that if a person has, they don't need a letter from anybody. If they have cancer, if they have MS, it really will be a checkoff form that says, I have this, let me into the pool. And that'll facilitate folks not having to go through a whole process if they have those things. But let me give an example. There are some carriers that accept people with asthma and some that don't. It depends on some of the medical records of that individual. We don't want to put things on that list that people would check off to get into the pool if, in fact, they could go to a carrier and actually get coverage, either an offer covering the asthma or an offer with a waiver for that asthma. So this just really does a couple things. It takes away the definition of adverse underwriting condition to mean the agent's refusal to apply. It allows then the board to move forward and establish the medical list of conditions that people would get into the pool with. And I think it is going to be and end up consumer friendly. They're going to like that list. It'll be a lot easier for them to document and get into the pool.
Mr. King, first of all, I just want to point out we're talking about the Dash 1 amendment, which basically replaces Senate Bill 130 as written. Just to make sure that's what we're talking about here. From what your testimony is, my impression is what we're trying to do is to provide more avenues for people to get coverage other than going into the OMIP pool. By not necessarily precluding those coverages and giving opportunities for other types of coverage to be had for those individuals.
That would be correct, Mr. Chair. And to add to that, also then making it easier for those folks that had specific conditions to get in. So it's kind of saying we want to make sure, even if we have to tell you have to go through that process, you're better off if you have a regular policy with one of the carriers, and we want you to do that. But on the other hand, we don't want you to have to jump through hoops if you have one of these specific conditions. And the board has a preliminary list of those conditions, but waiting the implementation of this or the passage of this, they won't implement those condition lists. You are correct.
Yeah. Senator Martha.
Yes. It's nothing. There's so much frustration with some of the patients who have been diagnosed with a something like cancer or AIDS and not able to get into any kind of insurance program, and if they have to go through another group insurance and then be rejected, et cetera. Isn't that the point where they wouldn't have, that would eliminate that process for them, and they could, you could just accept them right up front?
Senator, that would be correct. They would have a basically a checkoff list if their condition, and it's in, we've surveyed 31 other pools and put together a variety of lists that they're using, and then we'll have our provider representatives will really look at those and work with the carrier reps to make sure that the list includes those folks that are going to get turned down but doesn't include conditions where they might have an opportunity for private health insurance.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 130, open up a work session on Senate Bill 130, and members, we have before us what is the Dash 1 amendment, which is what we've been discussing, which replaces the bill as written.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 130.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 130. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 130 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 130 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Atkinson, would you be kind enough to carry this bill?
I'd be delighted.
Thank you very much. Our last thing that we have we're going to introduce some bills. I would request that we introduce as committee bills. And again, this would not indicate support or opposition to any of these bills. But if Teresa could just give us a brief summary of what they relate to, and then we'll be out of here.
Go quickly. There are six committee bills total. The first three are from the Oregon Building Industry Association. LC 253 shortens the time allowed under statutes of repose from 10 years to 6 years for commencing certain civil actions arising out of construction, alteration, or repair of improvements to real property. LC 255 requires insurers providing public liability, personal injury, and property damage coverage on contractors on the date a contractor receives notice on a construction defect to defend the contractor against construction defect claims and to pay the claim regardless of other potential insurance coverage. And LC 256 requires mandatory court arbitration of actions filed in a circuit court claiming damages caused by defendant's construction, alteration, or repair of residential real property. LC 1700 is from ODS. It's a similar scope to Senate Bill 129, which is currently in our committee. It modifies insurance financial regulations. Senate Bill 2001 is from Eric Roach, who is a constituent of Senator Deckert. It increases the minimum limits required for motor vehicle liability insurance policies when accident results in a bodily injury or death. And finally, LC 2002 establishes notice requirements for insurers offering renewal of homeowner policies on terms less favorable to a policyholder.
Okay. Anyway, those I would request that those be introduced as committee bills, and again, it does not indicate your support or objection. Any objection to introducing those as committee bills? If not, it's ordered. And with that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Okay.